Welcome back to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you this morning from the literal streets of the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and this is a premiere episode of me attempting to do a new style of episode of driving to work in my car and podcasting with the people. I've recently started a new job where I'm going to be driving a little bit further than my usual commute. And I just figured, you know what, this year, it's been a very productive year for myself and Daft J and other podcasters that have been on the show and other aspects of life. But in regards to the podcast, I've been lacking. I've been a little bit on the bench. I've lost a little bit of the creative edge or coming up with creative content to do. So I figured I've got to figure out a window of time where I can get back on the horse and talk about things that are usually featured on the podcast, whether it be movie reviews, comics I've read, things that are just going on within the city, whether it's comic book related or anything else is going on that you would usually find on this show. So I figured, why not try doing it while I'm on my way to work? I'm listening to the radio and hearing people talk to themselves. I'm talking back to myself. Why not do a couple of episodes in this fashion, see if it goes over well, and put a little bit of content out there? So the first thing that I wanted to, first of all, I want to send a shout out. I got to send a shout out and give credit where credit's due. The idea for this came from me listening to an associate of mine, MC Till, a producer from Cincinnati, Ohio, hip-hop producer. He's got a podcast, Everybody's Hip-Hop Label, where he does these quick 5-minute, 6-minute episodes where he's just tackling subjects of various things that are on his mind or are in the social discussion on social media, hip-hop related. And they just sounded like on-the-go type of real quick conversations that he's having. I said, why not try doing that? I like it. I might go a little bit longer than 5 minutes because I'm long-winded. You should see my text messages. I'm the worst. But I said, why not? Why not try doing that? And if I get distracted at any point in time or I lose my train of thought, please keep in mind that I'm also driving, trying to save my life. I'm gonna do my best to eliminate or be conscious of not saying which I've just done and I apologize for, but I'm gonna try my best. And if I get facts wrong in any of the things that I'm talking about, or if I seem like, a little bit searching for words, like I just did right now, you know, forgive me. I'm trying my best. So the first thing I want to talk about is recently at San Diego Comic-Con for 2019, they, you know, released a slate of all of the next movies and television shows that are going to be coming out through the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the next couple years. Some of it's pretty exciting. Some of it is interesting. They're interesting choices, not because they're bad choices, but because we are now finally going into other corners and crevices of the Marvel Universe, and literally the Marvel Universe with movies such as The Eternals being announced. You've got the announcement of Blade with Mahershala Ali, I think, taking on the role of Blade. You've got a Thor movie coming out in 2021. I don't remember them all off the top of my head. But there are also television shows announced, such as Captain America and Falcon, WandaVision, the Loki television show, all the things that are going to be on the Disney streaming channel. Pardon me, I have to order something. Order my coffee. Okay, I'm back. Had to get my blueberry muffin and a regular, please, if anyone's listening to the High Society album that me and Mr. Dane Hall, a.k.a. Has, put out. It's a little inside joke there. So at San Diego Comic-Con, they released their slate of movies and television shows that are going to be coming out. And that's exciting to know that there's going to be a whole new phase. Of course there is. It's a lot of money to be made in these things. But the idea that they're going to now tackle Blade or Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu, they're going into different realms. And that's exciting to see every aspect of the Marvel Universe be celebrated and addressed and have their own standalone stories. And who knows where it's going to go. The Eternals, like, we're getting real cosmic now. Another Thor movie with Jane Foster, Natalie Portman reprising her role as Jane Foster, and apparently she's going to be taking over as Thor, as per the Jason Aaron comic book run, which I just finished reading, as a matter of fact, which is really exciting. So I'm looking forward to all these things. But it also reminded me that the latest MCU movie, Spider-Man Far From Home, I never got a chance to review it, which I would usually do with Daff J. And people who've listened to this show would know that Spider-Man is one of my absolute favorite characters. One of my absolute favorite things, period. Love Spider-Man. And I gotta have at least a 10-15 minute review talking about the latest movie, which I enjoyed. And I had the opportunity to see it with good pal Martin Slam Duncan of the Fastball Special, who is the best at getting opening night tickets in IMAX 3D. Not just that he gets the tickets, he gets awesome seats. And he invited me to come see it with him and his cousin and his brother Dan. And I had a really good time. And it's a great movie, actually, to see in that format, because there's going to be definite special effects, especially in this movie, since you've got a villain such as Mysterio, who in the comics traditionally was a special effects master, a movie special effects master. So you know that there's going to be optical illusions and things like that. So seeing it in the IMAX 3D was perfect. So let's get into the movie a little bit. It's Tom Holland reprising his role. You've got Nick Fury now featured in this with Colby Smulders. Nick Fury being played by Samuel L. Jackson, of course. Colby Smulders being Maria Hill. Zendaya is MJ, not Mary Jane that we all know traditionally, just so we're clear. She's playing a version or some sort of adaptation of a Mary Jane character, being Peter's love interest in this one. You've got his pal Ned, who I feel is a amalgamate. He's more of a Ultimate Spider-Man Miles Morales character, Genki, but he's called Ned, I guess, as a reference to Ned Leeds, which is cool. You've got Brady Brandt, Flash Thompson, all the cast of characters that are in the Spider-Man comic book, high school comic book, are featured in this movie reprising the role. And what piqued my interest most about this movie particularly is that it's the first one to come out after Avengers Endgame, which has everybody who disappears from the Thanos snap in Infinity War is now, spoilers, there's going to be lots of spoilers. It's been three weeks, almost a month since this movie came out, so deal with it. But everybody who disappeared in Avengers Infinity War has now returned, and it's been 5 years since that movie. Now, conveniently, Peter Parker and all his cast of characters that are from the Homecoming movie that we met all disappeared along with him. So they are all still 5 years later from 2018, when Infinity War occurs, they're still the same age as they were in Homecoming. So they're like 15, 16 years old, maybe closer to 17. It doesn't matter. So they're all conveniently the same age still. I wanted to see how they were going to work that. I wanted to see what the explanation was, how it would fit into sort of this future Marvel Cinematic Universe, and what the repercussions would be of them still being in high school with 5 years having gone by. So the premise of this movie is that Peter just needs a break. He wants to go on a European trip with his pals. All of them seemingly are the ones that, again, disappeared conveniently. So they're headed to Venice, they're headed to Prague, supposed to go to Paris, all of these different places throughout Europe. MJ's going to be there, Ned is there, Betty Brandt is there. But in the process, Nick Fury is trying to get in contact with Peter Parker. He's now part of, you know, he's in Nick Fury's purview when it comes to any sort of global threats that need addressing. Tony Stark is no longer around, but Peter Parker, having been Tony Stark's protege, is now a go-to guy for Nick Fury to be calling. Happy Hogan has a very, very early appearance in the movie. He's featured throughout it. Jon Favreau reprising his role as Happy, telling him, listen, man, you don't ghost Nick Fury phone calls. And throughout the first 15, 20 minutes, I would say maybe more, Peter's ignoring the Nick Fury phone call. And as he heads to Europe, lo and behold, adventures ensue in Venice, and Nick Fury, being the spy and espionage expert that he is, intercepts Peter at his hotel, which is a great Easter egg, by the way, for those of us who've been paying attention, is Hotel de Mateus that the kids are staying at in Venice. So the whole premise of this movie, the plot line, is that there's a multiverse that has been discovered, and Quentin Beck, who is later known as Mysterio, Quentin Beck is a superhero from that multiverse who is now in the 616, and he's trying to stop the elementals, the four elementals, monsters that destroyed his universe. He's here to rescue the 616 Earth that Peter lives in from these set of elementals, and they turn to Peter for assistance in stopping these elementals. What's cool about that is that the elementals, monsters, which are more like the size of kaiju in a way. It's a little bit of an extreme example, but what's cool about it is that they're all kind of Easter egg, throwback, fan service things to actual Spider-Man villains. So you've got in the scene in Venice, you've got a huge water elemental monster, which is Hydro-Man, for those of us in the know. At the beginning of the movie, there's a scene of Quentin Beck, or Jake Gyllenhaal plays Mysterio. He's fighting a Sandman character in the new Mexican desert. Later on, you've got a Molten Man that they fight. I don't remember the last one now. Yes, Wynn would be the last elemental. I don't know who that would be in the Spider-Man villain. In the Spider-Man rogues gallery, but they're there. Now, the problem I have with this is that for the first hour or so of the movie, as much as you're invested in the story of Peter and his friends, which is interesting, and how Peter is fitting in with the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. protocol of Spider-Man being called upon by S.H.I.E.L.D., he's really ineffective when it comes to helping this Mysterio character stop these elementals. He's way out of his own element, no pun intended. So it kind of feels like we're being dragged along a little bit too long. And granted, this is me a month later reflecting back on the movie, because initially when I saw it, I absolutely loved it. It was great. It was a lot of fun. But there were certain things that made you feel like we could have done this a little bit different. But the whole point of Mysterio playing this superhero character from a multiverse, which sounds very confusing as I explain it on my drive to work, is really he's after a technology that Tony Stark has bestowed upon Peter, or that Peter has inherited from Tony Stark, and it's called Edith. They're a pair of spectacles or glasses that you would normally see Tony Stark wearing, but its technology is linked back to the Civil War, Captain America's Civil War movie, where Tony Stark is in front of an MIT group of college students, and he's showing them this new tech that has been developed by Stark Industries, where you can interface with your memories, have moments with, you know, your father, a conversation with your father that you never had. He kind of dismisses it at the time, says, you know, this is a billion-dollar project, these glasses wouldn't be, it's a great idea, but they just wouldn't be practical for people to use. But he bestows it on Peter, because now Tony Stark, as we know, is dead, and he's, you know, this Earth's number one savior, martyr, whatever the case may be. And he, in this iteration of Spider-Man, he is to Spider-Man what Uncle Ben usually is to Spider-Man, which is, I guess it works. So getting back to the plot, Peter Parker has these glasses, Edith, that helps him to now interface with all of Stark technology. He's got access to the satellites. He can basically access the internet almost in a way that, in a futuristic way where you can just call it up and get what it is that you need to get from it. It's a pretty awesome piece of tech. But Quentin Beck wants it because it's actually his design. He's the one who came up with this technology that was dismissed from Tony Stark, and he was kind of tossed to the side, as it were. So he's looking for his retribution, and he's doing it in a way that he's going to be playing the hero. Tony Stark is not going to be Earth's savior. Quentin Beck is going to be the savior of Earth, the one who stopped the elementals from destroying this universe, and he will be celebrated, and he will now get his retribution along with all of his co-conspirators who were also former Stark Enterprises employees who were all in on the coup with him, making everybody believe these optical illusions are real, but really, he's behind the whole thing. So he figures out a way for him and Peter to, quote-unquote, stop this last elemental. Peter realizes, you know what, I'm unfit to be in your line of work. You're the real hero. I'm not deserving of Mr. Stark's legacy. You're the guy who's going to step into Mr. Stark's shoes to be, you know, the guy to save everybody when push comes to shove, when things hit the fan. You take Edith. It'll be much more useful for you to have. I just want to go be a kid. I want to tell MJ how I feel about her. And I want to go about my business being a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. So the conspiracy works. Success. Quentin Beck gets it. And now he's going to have the last laugh. Along with all of this happening, MJ deduces that Peter is actually Spider-Man. She has her own feelings for him, for Peter. She obviously plays him very close to the chest. Her and Peter deduce that, hey, this Mysterio guy, he's a fake, he's a phony. None of the things that we thought were happening were real. I just gave him all of this power, all of this technology. The amount of damage he can do with it is extremely dangerous. We've got to figure out a way to stop him. Because of that, now all of Peter's friends, their lives are in danger. Quentin Beck, Mysterio, went from respecting this kid who he fooled, but he respected him, to now having to eliminate him and anybody else who knows about his conspiracy in order for him to proceed, in order for him to not be put to jail, whatever the case may be. So here's where all the cool stuff happens. The movie finally kicks into high gear. You're really now fully invested in the adventure, fully invested in the action, and fully invested in Spider-Man. Now we really get to see the Spider-Man go face to face with Mysterio optical illusions straight out of a comic book. There's some things that you see in this movie that is definite fan service to comic book covers. All of the things that you would have loved to see growing up as a kid, watching a Mysterio Spider-Man, you know, knock down, drag him out type of fight, you see in this movie. And it's great. It's a ton of fun. The last scene, the big huge battle takes place in London, and it's all of these Stark drones that are creating, again, these optical illusions. Peter's going up against Quentin Beck, having to use what they call, you know, his spider sense in this movie is the Peter Tingle, which is real stupid, and it's the name of that is given to him, given by Aunt May, played by Marissa Tomei, who is way too hot in this movie to play an Aunt May, but hey, I'll take it. It's better than a 70-year-old lady who's on her deathbed all the time. So Peter's spider sense is in full effect, and that's the way that he ultimately defeats Mysterio, who dies from wounds in the battle, not caused by Peter, but he ultimately dies. And the technology that's remaining behind, all of the information of who Spider-Man is taken from Quentin Beck's, one of the partners that he had that were a co-conspirator in the whole plot. I like this movie a lot. It may sound like I didn't, but I did. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was a fun ride. It was a great movie to go watch in the theater, especially. The problem with Spider-Man movies, though, I will say, and I don't want to get negative, is that this being the third iteration of live-action Spider-Man movies, there's a lot of things that you're supposed to have in play you're supposed to, the character is supposed to be affected by, such as the death of Uncle Ben, which is one of the most key components of any Spider-Man story and motivation. Now, you can still have it. It can still be there in different ways, because Peter Parker is always motivated by a certain sense of guilt that he has. And him having to live up to the sacrifice of Tony Stark, that fills the role of Uncle Ben, but to the point where certain elements of the character are taken away. A lot of other cool things are done, but those true blue Spider-Man tropes that you need to have there, and I say you need because it's kind of like if Batman's parents, the death of his parents was never referenced. I mean, that's always going to happen. It's not something that I always need to see the origin story for, but it's the essence of the character, that legacy that he has from his uncle, who played the role of his father. So for that not to be there, especially because it's been done so many times now, you feel like there's a lot of things sacrificed in order for this iteration of Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, just to say MCU, it's a lot of words, in the MCU, you feel there's a lot of things missing. And the things that they do reference, it's more paying homage to the fans. It's a fan service. For instance, in this movie, they have his buddy Ned and Betty have a little European romance, which is, of course, a callback to Ned Leeds and Betty Brant in the comic books, who actually did get married and were Peter's friends. But it's sort of done as a tip of a hat to those that are in the know. It's not anything that is truly going to affect Spider-Man's world. There's a lot of things that happen like that. And you've got this fine line of, this is more of an ultimate Spider-Man thing, and this is more of a traditional Spider-Man thing. And there's a lot of things that, as fans, we're just never going to get the true definitive Spider-Man movie that I think we all want and feel we deserve. Because, you know, Spider-Man is one of the most essential, if not recognizable, superheroes of all time. In the same category as a Superman or a Batman. I think Spider-Man is in that class of character. So those are my kind of hang-ups with it. They're not big hang-ups, but there's certain things you would like to see a little bit more of, and you're just not going to get them anymore. But with all that said, it was a very fun movie. The post-credit scenes were a joy. They definitely have repercussions. They definitely count. You've got a cameo from J.K. Simmons reprising his role as J. Jonah Jameson, which, again, is one of those things. As I'm watching these movies, I feel Peter's Parker's relationship working for a newspaper, being a photographer, hasn't been explored in a long time, and that's something that is kind of essential to the goings-ons of Spider-Man. Just him having to survive and make ends meet or help his aunt pay for the bills, that little extra cash that he gets in doing that. I know he lives in a 21st century where working for a newspaper isn't quite as profitable as it once was, but there are these aspects of the J. Jonah Jameson, Peter Parker relationship that you need to have in Spider-Man. So it was a joy to see J.K. Simmons in the post-credit scene actually going through his Spider-Man rant. And the purpose of it was a Civil War throwback. They've exposed Peter Parker as Spider-Man to the world, which is going to be very interesting to see how in the world they address that now. And then the post-credit scene is Nick Fury and Maria Hill. It's exposed that they were actually Skrulls the whole time, stepping into the role of Nick Fury while he's off-world somewhere taking a break from all of the goings-ons. So this is just exciting because, for me, it opens up the MCU to, we've already seen the Skrulls in Captain Marvel, but now them having reprised their roles in the movie universe just lets you know that there's going to be a lot more usage of this race of alien that can take us to any corner of the Marvel universe, that it's endless. It's really endless what we can do with all of that. So that was a ton of fun, and it just got me pumped to see what's coming up next. And I really don't know how they're going to work all of these different angles into the next couple movies or when the next Spider-Man movie's even going to take place. So, all in all, I'd give the movie a 7.58 mark, depending on the day. I'm sure I'll enjoy it a lot more when it comes out on DVD and I can watch it in the comfort of my own home, or I'll even have a better gauge of how I feel about this movie. It is a lot of fun. But at this point, I don't feel that the Spider-Man movies have as much of an impact or can be as good as Once Upon a Time. And I think that's just because this is now the 7th, 8th Spider-Man movie, if you're going to count Into the Spider-Verse, which I feel is the best of the bunch. And that's animated, of course, but it was very cool to see Mysterio as a villain. Thinking of the rogues gallery that Spider-Man has, we've seen quite a bit of villains, and to now use a... They did the whole fishbowl thing, which was awesome. You guys saw it. I mean, the movie's made $1 billion. I'm sure most people who are Marvel fans have seen this. So it was a ton of fun. Thank you to Martin Slan Duncan for inviting me out to watch this with him and his pals. And we'll see what comes up next. So I'm almost at work. Thank you for sitting with me as I rambled on about my Spider-Man review for Far From Home. It's much better to have someone to bounce these ideas off of, but DAFJ is not interested in some of these superhero movies anymore. I guess the ones that are a little bit more on the juvenile side of things, the Shazams, the high school Peter Parker kind of storylines, it's just not in her genre of superhero movies that she's interested in, so I had to at least review it for myself, for the people who usually listen to the show. Hi Shane, hi Martin, it's just you guys. And Adam Chapman, of course. So email us at kfsolitude@outlook.com. If there's certain subjects that you think I should talk about on my way to work, rambling on, and maybe I'll do a shorter version of these episodes, hit me an email, kfsolitude@outlook.com. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and leave us a review on iTunes. It'd be very much appreciated. Helps the show get out there, more people to listen to it. I am Eric Anthony. I'm almost at work. Thank you guys for listening. Take care. Paranoia, paranormal, paramorphic. Paragraphs, peel peroxide, they potent. You're playing with a poet. Paracel, pastor.